All right. Good afternoon.
Hi.
All right. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. So my name is Justin Kearns, and I'm from IOM. And yeah. And this is Mia Park. Mia is the head of office at IOM in Seoul. Okay. So today we'll talk a little bit about IOM, what we do a little bit, and some of the new emerging issues in migration globally. And Mia will talk a little bit more about forced migration specifically. So some of you guys look familiar from this morning. I think we talked to a few people. So let's see, what do we remember? So you guys in the back, what did we talk about this morning? About IOM. Huh? No, these two guys. Yeah. What do you guys remember from this morning? What's one thing you remember from our talk? Mm-hmm. Yep, very good. So IOM can help people from refugee camps resettle into new societies. Okay. What about you? What do you remember? Global organization. One more
time.
All right, very good. Globalist organization. All right, great. Thank you very much. All right. Well, we'll talk in here a little bit. So right now we talk about migration at a global level. So we say this is unprecedented era of human mobility. And now people are moving from one country to another country more than ever. People are moving within their own country more than ever. So we'll talk about some of the reasons, what's causing this in a little bit. But now just for the start, we'll say that this is the unprecedented era. People are moving more than ever. So as we go forward, migration is an issue that touches so many areas of society, and something that will continue to do that in the future. So migration matters. So if they demographically, 1 billion, what do you think 1 billion represents? What do you think 1 billion, what does that represent? What are we saying with 1 billion? You guys can talk. You can talk. No wrong answers. I mean, I won't make fun of them. Out of that first row, what do you guys think? 1 billion, what do you think it means? That's very true. So pickle, what is pickle? What does that have to do with migration? What does that have to do with migration? Absolutely. 1 billion people migrate. Very good. So 1 billion people. We have about 250 million living in another country. So migrants like me, living in a different country. And then in the same country, moving from one place to another, almost 800 million. So more people than ever are moving from the country into the cities. So there are problems in the cities, new issues that we have to deal with there too. All right, economically, $581 billion. What do you think that means? $581 billion. $581 billion. This one's hard. So I'll just tell you. $581 billion is how much money that migrants living in a different country have sent back to their home country in 2014. So you go to another country, you work, send money back to your family to help them live, for their education, to build a house, for many different reasons. So very big money coming from migrants back to their homes. Next one, socially, we have different issues with human rights, protecting migrants' rights. Every country has migration issues. Integration, helping migrants come into a new society and become part of that society. So existing with the people there. And last one, universally, 193 plus, you know what I mean? What do you think? 193 plus. Migration matters universally. 193 plus. Any idea? Mm-hmm. Countries, yes. So UN countries, over 193. And every single country has migration issues. People leaving the country, people coming into the country. How do you deal with those? How do you try to maximize the benefits for both your country and for the migrants? Do you know how many foreigners live in Korea now?
A million?
More than a million. More than a million. 1.8 million. So almost 2 million foreigners. So it's the highest number that has ever been in Korea. Highest number that's ever been. Okay? So who are the people that are migrants? Who are the migrants? So people move for a lot of different reasons. On the news, we see a lot refugees, right? We see refugees all the time. Now, especially Syria, through Turkey, into Europe, Lebanon, Jordan. We see refugees everywhere. And that's one type of migrant, but so many different types. So we have people like you guys. A lot of you will probably go and study abroad. Or has anybody studied abroad already? Studied, yeah? No? Okay. I bet you will. I bet a lot of you will. So you will be migrants in your new country. You'll be students there, student migrants. You have people like me that came to Korea to work. You have other people who are working in factories, working on farms, working like low-skilled jobs. So you have people that are children, people that are refugees, coming to join their families. So migrants are a lot of different people in society, not just the refugees, not just refugees. So things that are driving migration. One thing that we'll touch on really quickly is disparity. So number three, disparity. Disparity between North and South. So one thing that I work a lot with people from Nepal that are in Korea. So a lot of them come and they work in factories here. So in Nepal, for the same work, they make maybe $100 a month or $200 a month. If they come to Korea and do the same work, they make about $1,700 a month. So the same work, huge difference in a different country. So people are leaving countries where they're poor, where they don't have a lot of resources, going abroad and gaining more resources. Yeah. Right. And the last one, dreams, I think that one's really cool, like helping people leave a certain country, not only for bad things, not just because there's no jobs, not just because there's a war, not just because there's some violence, also for good things. I have a dream that I want to go live in Spain. So I want to become a great Spanish flamenco dancer. So I go to Spain, and I live there, and I follow my dream. So there's also good reasons that people migrate as well, pursuing their dreams, pursuing their better life. Okay? So IOM is almost everywhere now. So now we're 150 different countries, so all over the world. And because migration, especially international migration, involves so many different people, has so many different effects, you have to work together with different countries. So what we do, you guys, some of you came and you asked this morning, you asked to me, so what does IOM do? It's like a lot. So IOM migration issues touch on so many parts of society, and IOM is there to help in all of those different areas. So we'll talk a little bit more about this later. I work mostly in this one, in labor mobility and human development. So when people go to different countries to work, what kind of policies do we need to help protect their rights, to make their migration beneficial for themselves, for their home countries, and for their countries where they're going to work? And human development. So how can we help take those resources that they make and have them have better development impacts in their home country? Next, immigration and border management. So working with governments to help them make their immigration policy. How do they manage their borders? How do they help keep them secure? How can they help regulate the flow of people across their borders? Migration assistance, counter trafficking. Mia will talk a little bit more about trafficking. Does anybody know what? Ooh, we talked about this with somebody this morning. Lucky, because it would have been a test. So with trafficking is one of the biggest issues of moving people from one country to another and selling them into labor. Was it you? Maybe. All right, feel lucky. All right, and other ones, emergency, post-crisis, and disaster risk. So when you have disasters, people move from one place, typhoon hits here, people move to another place in their same country. So they need places to live, they need water, they need food, they need things like that, and IOM helps to provide those. Right. So emerging issues, the last thing that I'll talk about, and then we'll switch over to Mia. So these are some of the things with you guys in the future when we talk about careers at IOM or careers in different international organizations. These are some of the issues that are continuing to come up. So everybody knows about Syria. Everybody knows that that's a big issue that's always on the news. So you see that coming, and that's kind of irregular migration, forced migration, which Neil will talk about a little bit more. And first one, gender-appropriate migration programming. So different genders have different needs. And how do we account for those needs in migration policies is the big issue. Supporting sustainable development goals. So IOM's basic motto came out as the sustainable development goal in reducing inequality among nations. That's irregular migration by sea. So we see in Europe all the time, the people coming on the boat. And you saw in Thailand as well. And last, like you guys, youth migration and student mobility. So, do you guys know the K-Move program? Have you heard of that? You guys should probably look into that. This is one of Korean government programs to help match students in Korea with jobs in different countries. So if you have interest in going and working abroad, UN certainly exists there for you, but also you guys might want to look into K-Move, K-M-O-V-E, so another program. But you guys have so much potential to go and do good things, to learn new experiences, bring them back to your country, use your experience in Korea in different countries. So continuing to make paths for you guys to go to different countries to work and to pursue your dreams. Cool. And so now we'll let Mia talk a little bit more about forced migration. Let's give her a hand.
You skipped a lot of parts. So I'm going to talk about forced migration. Justin kind of went over some of the things that IOM does. Because IOM is the leading migration agency, and for IOM, it means migration means simply human mobility. So if human moves, we get involved. So at IOM, we're very, very busy. So today, we're only going to talk about forced migration aspect of what we do. Okay, how was it supposed to do that? So what's forced migration? Put it simply, it's involuntary migration. All of us, well, most of us, we migrate because we want to or we choose to. It's one of an option. We migrate for better schools, better healthcare, better dance career, better man, woman. We have a choice. But for many people, people move, they leave home because they have to. So they escape persecution, conflict, repression, natural and human-made disasters, other situations that endanger their lives, freedom, and livelihood. So for too many people, migration is not just an option, it's the only option. It's their survival strategy. So what are some of the causes of forced migration? First, very obviously civil war. We hear about Syria, but it's not only Syria. There's Iraq, Afghanistan, Sudan, Yemen, Central African Republic, Burundi these days. There are a lot of conflict going on. Persecution. If you guys was in the UNHCR session, you probably heard about the definition of refugee, is that they are fleeing persecution. They're persecuted on the basis of religion, race, ethnicity, political opinion, social membership. So that's one of them. Natural disasters with climate change. There's more harsher and more frequent typhoons, earthquake, flood. Right now in the Philippines, they get floods like 3-4 times a year. In Nepal, we had earthquakes, so people are displaced because of these natural disasters. Human trafficking, which I'll talk about more in depth, but it's basically people are displaced through deception or coercion with purpose of exploitation. It's also called modern-day slavery. And famine exists, and extreme poverty. These are some of the reasons, but the current day drivers of forced migration are very complex and they're multi-causal. It's rarely just one reason. It's combination of all different reasons. This is a map of ILNs, indicating number of different IDPs. IDPs are internally displaced persons. They're usually displaced within their country, so they haven't crossed border because of conflict or disaster. So there are about 57.3 million IDPs, 2014. And refugees, there are about 14.4 million refugees right now. And that's also a number of people who've been arriving to Europe. So I'm sure most of you have watched on the news. Syrians, Afghanistan, people from Afghanistan, different countries going to Europe. So this is a map. So if you go on ION website, you'll see this map. So what is ION doing about forced migration? We do data collection and research, and we share this information actively with governments, international organizations, UN, and the public. Humanitarian assistance, of course, we are one of the largest humanitarian assistance providers in the world, which I'll talk about. Refugee resettlement, which I'll talk about, counter-trafficking, and also advocacy. Because we're the only international organization with a mandate to protect migrants, and migrants are not a very popular group, so we're kind of the only one advocating for them.
But in our office, I'm the only migrant, and nobody advocates for me in my office. They all just make fun of me and treat me bad all the time.
Yes, Seth. Well, he doesn't have a chair. And
I don't even have a chair. I don't even have a chair.
We'll give you one if you behave. And we support migration management. This is usually for the government, migration government. But today, we're going to talk about the first working. I'm going to show you some of the pictures. And I think this picture is probably familiar, you guys are. So in 2013, IOM produced the first global estimate of number of migrants dying on migratory route, whether at sea or land. The number doubled in 2014, about 5,000 reported migrant deaths. And this is only reported. So we assume there would be a lot more. So last year we called it the deadliest year for migrants. 2015 is what? October. We still have two more months to go, and it's already 4,500. So number is increasing. This is a picture of Bangladesh and Myanmar migrants trying to reach Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia. So in May, over 300 people died in the Andaman Sea, mostly Rohingyas and Bangladesh migrant workers. They were all victims of human smuggling because they couldn't find legal pathways to reach these places. They were smuggled, but the smugglers, they left them at the sea. They abandoned the boat. So some people were in this boat, all these crowded, for up to 4 months. Without food, imagine that condition. This is the picture of the Bangladesh and Myanmar, people coming from Myanmar. And this is a picture of Syrian refugees crossing the Serbian-Croatian border. I'm sure you guys seen this picture. And this one is migrants and refugees in Greece. Last weekend alone, over 27,000 migrants entered Greece, highest on record on the weekend alone. So with Greece with their own economic problem, imagine how they can manage this problem. So they need help. I know that Syrian refugee crisis is very, everyone's talking about it. I was just at the speech contest for the high school students. They were super impressive. Well, many of them talked about Syrian refugee crisis. One thing I want to talk about here is that we need to see this in the right context. So the people in 2014, about 135,000 Syrian refugees sought asylum in Europe. This year, more than 500,000. It's increasing. But if you see, Lebanon has almost 1.2 million refugees living in Lebanon. And so one in five people in Lebanon are Syrian refugees. What's the population of Europe? And Europe is not a country, it's a whole continent. And right now they have about 500,000 Syrian refugees seeking asylum. So we need to compare the differences. Jordan, 630,000 Syrian refugees. In Turkey, almost 2 million refugees. So most refugees, they're in these developing countries. So Europe panicking over these people, maybe we need to think differently. So what is IOM doing? We're collecting data. We're calling it Missing Migrant Project. This is the latest one from October something, I think 2 days ago or 3 days ago. So about 658,000 people have been arriving by sea to Europe, and there's been about more than 3,000 deaths in the Mediterranean Sea alone this year. This is just this year. And this is a map of migration flow to Europe. We're tracking how migrants are moving. This is all on IOM website. It's very cool. It's interactive. It's not that cool. And we've been sending out these updates almost daily. This is the migrant deaths that we're counting, tracking. As you can see, most deaths are in the Mediterranean. So let's see who these people are. The people who are arriving in Italy are from Eritrea, Nigeria, Somalia, Sudan, and Syria. So we hear a lot about Syria cases, but there are all these other countries, Eritrea, Nigeria, Somalia, Sudan. In Greece, the number is highest for Syrians, but we also have Afghanistan, people from Iraq, Pakistan, and Albania. So it's just not Syrian refugees. You have refugees from other countries or other people who have other reasons, complex reasons. Another thing that we need to, is worth noting, is that significant number of these people are minors, meaning just like you, okay, you're not children, but we say children under 18. So some of you fall under that category. So these minors are traveling alone. So imagine if you guys were traveling alone from wherever you were coming from, let's say Syria, crossing to Turkey, and then, you know, with the boat to Greece and cross to Europe by yourself. It's very dangerous. So we need specific protection and assistance issues for these minors as well. So what is IOM doing? As I said, we're collecting data, sharing information, and of course we're providing direct assistance at the transit and arrival, as well as, of course, the most direct assistance are at the place of origin, humanitarian assistance. And we're advocating for increased resettlement support by our member states, especially the European countries, the U.S. and other countries. And we're supporting campaigns to address xenophobia and inclusive reception of migrants, because I'm sure you see on TV as well that in Europe and in other countries as well, there are increasing anti-migrant sentiments. They don't want that. So it's very important that we fight that as well.
So what are they doing in that picture?
Which one?
The one on the right.
So those are ones who arrived in Italy, who were saved from the what's that called? The Italy Mars baby. So IOM is doing an interview and seeing what their needs are so that we can provide timely assistance. And this is, you know, us meeting with important people. Try to come up with important solutions. So aside from data collection, I'll talk a little bit about humanitarian assistance, because this is a very important component. Because we have to provide assistance in, we're providing assistance in Syria, the neighboring countries, as well as other disasters area. So every disaster, there's IOM providing humanitarian assistance. This is a picture in Nepal. So what we do, this is going to be very brief, because this alone can take a day. We do disaster risk reduction, camp coordination and camp management. This is basically for managing and coordinating refugee camps, ID camps, with UNHCR and other UN partners. We provide shelter, non-food items. WFP provides food. We provide non-food items that are essential for their survival. Coarse water, sanitation, hygiene, health, and protection. These are some of the pictures. IOM's work in different places. We also do a lot of transportation. We transport people from different camps or to the camps or back to their homes as well and to other countries. So the second, another practical program that we do is refugee resettlement. Refugee, if you're recognized legally as refugee, then you have three options. Anybody in the UNHCR session in the morning? No? No? Okay. Refugees have three options. Either they can go back home if it's possible. If it's safe to do so, they can voluntarily go back home. Second, they can stay and integrate a country where they've been given the status of refugee. The third option is they can be resettled in the third country, mostly in advanced countries, mostly in the U.S. About 70% of refugee resettlement takes place in the U.S. U.S. is a very generous country. So what we do, and refugee resettlement is one of the solutions that we're advocating for the current migrant refugee crisis in Europe, is that European countries need to increase their quota of receiving them, because once they receive the resettled refugees, these people can live there as long as they want. So what is IOM doing?
Sure. This is one of our questions from you guys was, what's the difference between forced migration and refugees?
Refugees are forced to migrate.
So refugees are under forced migration, the type of forced migration.
Yes.
And what is the different role of IOM from UNHCR?
Which I'll explain.
Okay.
So refugee resettlement for IOM, what we do is we prepare them for new life. So a lot of refugees who are resettled, they've been living in the camp for a long time. So average year a refugee stays in a refugee camp is how many years?
What do you think?
I think.
How long do you think someone stays in a refugee camp? So you see them on the news, you see people have to leave their homes and they come into some new camp. How long do you think they stay there? A week? A month? A year? 5 years? 10 years? 2 weeks? How long do you think they stay? 10 years.
3 years.
3 years. A month.
10 years.
20 years, my man. They're never leaving.
20 years.
Moving there.
Good. I'm not very confident with this answer, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. 18 years. So, for a lot of people,
not even joking.
They live there for a long time. And so it's their home. Some people are born there and they live there. So when they go to advanced countries to resettle, very new. A lot of refugee camps are also in the tropical countries. So they don't know winter, they don't know snow, they don't know cold, they don't know Noreba and all these lights and, you know. So we have to prepare them before they leave. So that's what we do. So this will explain the difference between UNHCR and IOM. Basically, UNHCR are the one, they are the refugee agency. Refugees, it's their mandate to protect them and give them assistance. So they help them and they give them the refugee status. And they work with the government to facilitate the refugee resettlement. So the government have certain quotas. Every year, different governments say, okay, this year we're going to accept certain number of refugees. U.S., it's been over 70,000. With Syrian crisis, they said they're going to accept 85,000. European countries, usually in the thousands, they don't accept that many. So once they do that, we get a list of refugees who will be resettling. So IOM gets the list, and we prepare them for the travel. So we give them, we do health assessment and treatment. We prepare, we give them cultural orientation, language training, pre-departure orientation, and we provide travel logistics and departure assistance. If you go to most of the major airports in the world, you might see a group of people with a plastic bag with big IOM logo on it. And those people are usually resettling refugees. Because we give them the whole packet of different documents that they need, and they have to have that. It's a symbol of refugee resettlement.
If you're talking, people are coming to Korea. If refugees are being resettled in Korea, what kind of things are in their cultural orientation?
Which I'll go over.
Yeah.
Yo, this is why you don't have a chair. Refugee resettlement with health assessment. We're basically looking to see if they can travel. That's the first reason, to see if they can travel. Or if they're ill, we need to provide medical escort. And also, so the receiving countries are aware of these people's medical needs. So when they arrive, they can receive medical treatment. Here, pre-departure orientation and cultural orientation. We're informing them about the process of resettlement, creating realistic expectations because, you know, you're imagining you're living in a camp in Thailand for last 10 years and now you're going to the U.S. You have a certain expectation. You're imagining your life is going to be in certain ways. But in real life, it's really not the case. Because living in a different country is very difficult. So we try to manage realistic expectations. Language training, so to live, let's say someone going to Japan or Korea or even to the States, you need language training and learning how to travel by air. A lot of these people have never traveled by air. You know, using the airplane, what is it?
Toilet.
Toilet? It's great.
So if you go to like an IOM center where they do their pre-departure training, they'll make like an airplane. So they'll make like a model version of the airplane. And they'll give you your ticket. And so you walk into the airplane and oh, where? And they're like, okay, now you have to go to the bathroom. What do you do? They look around and they have to go to the back of the plane and find the bathroom. So all these things that we think of as being basic are things that you have to teach people in their cultural orientation and make sure that they're ready to go to a new country.
Yes. So we cover that as well, and then we cover the language and very basic information about money, banking, public transportation, national holidays, very basic stuff that you need to know before you leave. We have our staff here. You can ask her. She's the one who developed these pre-departure cultural orientation. So afterwards, you can ask her all of them. And these are some of the pictures of our training. So we have classes for not only adults, but for children, students, children as well, and as a family as well. We also provide travel logistics and departure assistance. And now I'm going to talk about counter trafficking. This is a very important issue that people usually are not aware of. So, and this is a very important part of forced migration. Has anyone heard of human trafficking? So human trafficking, there is a whole complex definition, which I'm not going to go into. But it's basically, it's the buying and selling of men, women, and children within and across borders in order to exploit them for money. In Korea, it has been translated to 인신매매. But 인신매매 doesn't really cover the whole real definition of human trafficking, but that's what we use here. An estimated 20 million people, men, women, children, are living as victims of human trafficking globally. There's no country that's not affected by human trafficking. Just like migration, if there is migration, there's human trafficking because people can be exploited for a lot of money. And it is estimated that one-third of trafficked persons are minor children under 18. And it's a big criminal enterprise. The reason is because if you use drug trafficking, you buy and you consume for one more time. If you buy a person, you can exploit them as long as you have that person. It could be 1 year, it could be 5 years, it could be 10 years. You can exploit them for your financial gain. And which is why it's been called modern-day slavery. This has been taken up very seriously by U.S. government. The U.S. government publishes annual trafficking in persons report. And they give each country, all the countries in the world, a grade of how they're doing with human trafficking. It's a very important issue. There's a big challenge, though, because the victims need to be identified so that we can help them and we can persecute the bad people. But it's very difficult to identify trafficking victims. There are many different reasons. The definition is very broad, and sometimes they're treated as illegal migrants when they should be treated as human trafficking victims or other forced labor or other category of crime. So the number who's been identified is very small. And only when you're identified as a victim, you can receive appropriate treatment and service. But because you're not, there's a big gap. IOM's been providing most of the assistance to victims of trafficking, identified victims of trafficking. So 1 in 7 identified victims of trafficking would be supported. And our data shows that they're more adults because adults, you need to make them work. More males now. Human trafficking discussion, the last decade has mostly been sex trafficking. So I'm sure you've heard of, you know, brothels in Cambodia, in Thailand, and different places where you find young girls under traffic. That's called sex trafficking. But that is worldwide. In Cambodia, you find girls as small as little as 5-6. And then there are adults as well. Is there for a long time. And nobody is there because they want to. Nobody's there because they want to. Either they're forced to, coerced to, and they can't get out. Increasingly, we find more forced labor, labor exploitation. These days, there's a lot of talk about labor exploitation in the fishing industry. You might have seen on the news, laborers from developing South Asian countries, the fishermen who've been trafficked to Thai fishing boats, other fishing boats, and they're stuck there for years in the boat, forced to work, not being paid, not being given proper meals, and they're abused physically, mentally, sexually abused for years without any payment or less payment, which is called, why it's called modern day slavery. So what is IUN doing about it? We try to prevent trafficking by educating the migrants to do smart migration. Smart migration. So if you hear a chance, a job opportunity abroad that's too good to be true, then it's too good to be true. Because a lot of times they're coerced or they hear that, oh, you can go to this country and become, waitress or
IT professional.
They're not IT professional. You have to have skill. But like certain proper jobs. But when you go, you're forced to prostitute or you're forced to do other work or the working conditions or the pay that you thought that you would be given are different. So we're trying to educate and do a lot of campaigns. So these are all pictures that we're doing to inform migrants about this issue. And also the public as well, because public needs to know that this is an important, serious issue and that we can do something about it. Protection, we give protection services to victims of trafficking. Persecution, so we work with the government, we train, we educate law, legal officers in the country and government to come up with laws and legislation to persecute traffickers. ABRR is a big component. It's assisted voluntary return and reintegration. So the victims who would like to go back to their country and reintegrate, we help them. So we do a lot of different activities, but I'm going to highlight two very cool initiatives that you guys can all participate. First one is called IONX. Cool? No? It used to be MTVX initiative. Cool, huh? No? So we observed it, so now it's called IONX. It's basically it's an online platform to encourage safe migration and public action to stop human trafficking and exploitation. So you go on this website, ionx.org, you can learn about what human trafficking is. The interactive tool for you to learn about very basics of human trafficking. So then you learn and you can share with your friends on your Facebook or Twitter, all SNS stuff. So please, after, when you go home, check out IOMX and share, please. Second initiative that we're doing is with Microsoft. It's called Six Degrees. It's called Six Degrees. So IOM and Microsoft are collaborating to enable people around the world to assist victims of human trafficking financially by using a crowdfunding approach. So this is also the website, 633.org. So what it does is IOM, because we've been providing direct assistance to victims for many years, so we have a lot of experience, we have standards, protection issues. So when we encounter a victim, we do needs assessment. We do needs assessment to see what that person needs. So it could be, you know, immediate accommodation in a safe place of safety, medical, legal assistance, returning home, AVR, car, returning home journey, when they return, education or skills development, whatever it takes for them to resettle in their community independently. So that's what we're doing. And so we do a needs assessment and come up with the things that they need. And we put that up online like this. But because we have very strict victim protection and privacy standards that we don't use their real names and we don't use pictures, but we use their stories to see where, how they've been moved and what type of conditions they were in and what support they need to restart their life. And so you can go on this website. There are many cases that you can support. So this is a great way for you individually, even if you're a student, that you can go and help an individual to start a new life, fight injustice your way, very easy. So I encourage each one of you to go check out this website. So we talked a lot about different forced migration issues. The thing is, going forward, what needs to happen in a very general way is that we need more legal pathway for migration. Because there's limited legal pathway for migration, people are taking dangerous routes, become vulnerable to human traffickers, human smugglers, and they end up dying. People tend to think that migration, especially coming to your country, is bad, that they're taking your jobs, they're criminals, you know, all these things. But in reality, it's not the case. There's not many advanced countries in the world that did not accept migrants. And especially in countries like here, where you have very low fertility birth rates, our population is going to shrink. So we need to have more migrants, accepting more migrants. And that's the case in Europe as well. And, of course, we have to fight crimes against vulnerable and desperate people, human trafficking, human smuggling. We need to empower migrants. We need to educate them, let them know their rights, how they can protect themselves, and, most importantly, promoting positive image of migrants. And we're doing many campaigns to promote this. The reason why this is important, and especially at IOM, we feel that investing in managing the image of migrants in the society is very important, is because of this reason. So there are a few areas of public policy that are subject to greater misrepresentation and political discourse, yet more influenced by public opinion than international migration. Just looking at Europe, politicians and government, they're trying to figure out what the public's mood is, and then decide if they're going to accept these Syrian refugees or not. Here, in most countries, migration policies are not usually made based on facts, but public opinion. And public opinions are a lot of times made through myths about migration. So at IOM, we're doing our best to come up with facts and data, and we share them very proactively. And also we do different campaigns. So this is a picture of IOM. Korea did with metropolitan government last year. International Migrants Day is December 14th. Each year is International Migrants Day. And last year, IOM had two campaigns. Migrants Contribute and Migrants Are Me. So we had them at Seoul Plaza last year. This year, we have Migrant Hero Campaign and I Am a Migrant Campaign. This is basically a platform where migrants can share their stories of how they're contributing to their new country. Like I'm sure you can see Dr. Kim, the World Bank President, a Korean who migrated to U.S. welcomed him, and now he's the President of World Bank. And there are many different people, and you don't have to be the President of World Bank. You know, you could be a cleaner. You're making that city clean. It's a great contribution. So it doesn't have to be a great thing. But most migrants are making contributions. So when you guys go to another country, you guys will make vast contributions wherever you go. I know you guys are super smart. I was really impressed with the content. So this is what we're doing. I'm going to end with this. So this year, for the International Migrants Day in December 14th, IOM is calling on the international community to come together and remember the refugees and migrants who have lost their lives this year. Too many people are losing their lives just trying to migrate. IOM's been obsessively tracking and counting each number of these migrant deaths. And this is because each of these people, they have a name, or they have a family, they have a story. You know, either he or she is a father or mother or son or daughter or a husband or wife to someone. And they were simply seeking better opportunity and safety for themselves and their children. They were simply looking for a future that we all have. For us, it's so easy. But for some people, they have to take risks to find that future. And that is simply not right. If we really believe that every human being is equal, then the value and importance and significance for a person to have a dignified life and future, it should be the same. So these people who are losing their lives because they're trying to reach a certain place to find a future is simply wrong. And we want to make sure that the world remembers these people. We're not just talking about refugees who are making it to Europe, but people who are dying in their roots. So come December 14th, I would ask you, well, it's supposed to be a candlelight thing. I'm not sure if we're going to do a candlelight event, but you don't have to have a candlelight. Just make sure you take a moment to remember these people and what you could do. And that would mean a lot to IOM and for these people. So thank you. That was a long presentation on forced migration. Thank you, and thanks, Justin. And we have about 10 minutes for question and answer. And you can ask any questions. Yes.
We're going to like support for the migration life. Where's the money come from to have all those boys and things?
Great question. So IOM, as an intergovernmental organization, international intergovernmental organization, most of our funding comes from different governments. But then we have other projects, like the one that I showed you, Sixth Degree, are some of the donations we get from individuals to support individual victims. We work with private sector, other NGOs and other UN agencies, but mostly they come from the governments. And usually a government would have a specific project they want us to implement for them. So like this, for the European crisis, different European governments request IOM to support them to manage their migration. So they give us funding to actually implement those projects. And for humanitarian assistance, just like UNHCR, UNICEF, WFP, we get funding from the government and different donors. Another question?
You said about the pathway to refugees. And can you give me more details about it?
Okay, so for legal pathway for refugees, there's two different types. So once you're legally recognized as refugees, we need to give them more livelihood opportunity for them to actually live there. But legal pathway specifically, I meant for refugee resettlement, because refugee resettlement is a more real, durable solution, because they can actually start a new life in a different country. And if you're not being resettled, and it's difficult for them to have a legal pathway to migrate to another country, because you kind of need to stay where you've been given the refugee status. And ROK has became the 28th refugee resettling country last year. Government hasn't resettled any yet, but they plan to do so from this year. So you should be very proud.
Okay, we have 4 minutes left. So
just 2 questions?
I would like to ask a specific case about Korea that you're suggesting that Korea should receive more migrants, but then in terms of integration, as Korea has been a long time as a home to this country, and the presence on the ground, there are a lot of group of migrants, not necessarily all, that face difficulties and hardships to be integrated with Korean society, for example. What do you think that Korea could do to improve the integration system to, you know, to be able to handle and receive more migrants in their own country? Thank you.
And, you know, accepting more migrants is just my personal opinion. It's not the opinion of IOM, just so. Migrant integration issue is very important here in Korea, but it's not only here. It's worldwide. Right now, the most requests we're getting from these European countries is migrant integration. They all face the same problem, issue. Even though they are more diverse, a lot more diverse than here, migrant integration is a big problem. And there's no magic solution. I can't say, oh, you do this and they'll be fine. It takes time, but the most important thing is that we need to understand that migrant integration is both ways. You can't expect migrants coming to Korea to just become a Korean. They're not. They have their history. They have their culture. And we need to respect that. So we need to accept them in their form, but they also need to accept us. So it's both ways. But because Korea has been a homogeneous country for so long, that it's taking more time. But young people, especially like you guys are a lot more open. So I believe in future, in 10, 20 years, it will become a lot easier. But it's very important that for you, as young, important population, that you know that migrant integration is both ways. You have to accept them. You can't just ask them to become Korean. It's the same as when you go to the States or other countries, you cannot just become an American. There's no way. I lived in America for 10 years. Still very Korean as maybe not. So what needs to be done is it's very important that we realize that and we do everything based on that principle, that it's not one way, it's both ways. But it's going to take time.
Okay. Thank you for your presentation today. I have a question for you. Your migrant here contains a very impressive, because some migrants are very, like, going through on their, they're on their suffering. But these heroes are, you know, socially successful and becoming helpful for everyone in the country or all over the world. So compared, so my question is, taking the histories into account of the states such as the U.S. or Australia, do you, does the IOM consider the whole population as migrants? Or do you also consider like second generation or third generation of Korean Americans or like Korean Chinese also as migrants who were actually born in the States of the planet? Thank you.
Well, if you're born there, you're a citizen, and you become a native. So you're not considered migrant. Migrant is someone who has left home. Different organizations have slightly different definitions of migrants, but for us, it's people who have left home, whether that's voluntary or involuntary, to another place. For us, that's migrants. So for us, migrants includes a lot of different people, but usually not a Korean American or second generation or third generation. But socially, they consider themselves migrants. And so in such discussion, they're also involved. But when we provide assistance or direct service, our service is mostly restricted to our definition of migrants. So there's kind of two different. Okay, I don't think we have time. If you have more questions, I think I'll be out there. So you're welcome, and thank you very much.